Uncharted Podcast, Episode 7, Night Photography. Welcome to the Uncharted Podcast. And hello, I'm your host, Joe Burkhead, coming to you from Michigan. Welcome to the Uncharted Podcast. It's great to join you again after quite a hiatus there. We're going to be talking about night photography with our guest, John Milligan, going into a little bit of talk about some gear. We've got some events coming up, and last but not least, talk about a workshop coming up. Welcome to the Uncharted Podcast. Wow, how the time has flown by. I am just glad to be back with you again after quite that hiatus there. We are looking at episode 7 after a couple years of being gone. I just got back from Yosemite National Park. What a great, great experience that was. Just awesome to get out there and get out into the mountains with the family. And, you know, you roll the dice when you go in March, and it could be rainy and snowy, and who knows what could happen out there. But it just so happened it was in the 60s, super sunny skies the whole time, absolutely perfect weather. Couldn't have been more lucky. It was definitely, hands down, one of my favorite Yosemite experiences ever. We went to the top of Yosemite Falls and had a blast. So proud of the kids for making it all the way to the top. It's like a 3,000-foot elevation change, so it's no light hike there to get up there. But once you get up there, the view is just out of this world. And we now we're back and getting caught up with Uncharted. And it's April now, and the snow is flying here in Michigan. So we've got that to contend with as well. But just to get you caught up, because it has been a while, we've had some of our folks have had some personal things come up. I just went through some airline captain training. I'm in a big relief getting that done now. We've had some good stories actually getting posted on the website. If you haven't been back to the uncharted.net website lately, we've been making improvements despite taking the hiatus with the podcast. And we've just had a bunch of night photography, night astronomy type photos, eclipses, northern lights, all kinds of cool stuff, Milky Way galaxy. There's been all kinds of neat things posted there lately. If you haven't checked it out for a while, I invite you to get back to the Uncharted website and take a look. And that's part of the reason we're doing this topic today of night photography, is there's just been such great opportunities lately for photographing the stars and the heavens. And so yeah, here we are trying to make some headway with that. Additionally, we've made some improvements to the site. We've got, you know, just some great things going on. We've got the maps working now. We have a gear section where you can buy some stuff, you know, t-shirts or what have you. We've got a great explorer section still going. So we're going to keep making improvements along the way. And also groups, and we'll talk a little bit about more of that a little bit later here in the show. But without further ado, I really want to get to this night photography thing. It's just such an exciting thing to talk about. Great guest that we'll have, one of our own with Uncharted. As I was thinking about this topic getting started and what we might talk about, I was really reflecting on my own experience looking up at the stars as a kid. You know, just, you know, I had a great view of the stars from my backyard. I was really lucky to have that and be able to look up and see all the stars all over. I had a telescope my dad gave me, and I would, you know, fire that up and look up there, and I would see the northern lights sometimes. And I was also thinking about this a few years ago. I came back from Hong Kong, and, you know, when you're living in a big city like that, it's really hard to see the stars. And we flew back home, and we flew over the North Pole, just about the North Pole. And my son opened the window, and we looked out the window. He's like, "Daddy, look out the window!" And what's going on? And it was the Northern Lights, and flying in the Northern Lights is just completely unreal. It was like nothing I experienced before. It was so incredible. It looked like you were flying in the Northern Lights. Everything was green and glowing, and the stars above and off on the horizon, and, you know, what looked like Northern Lights below us a little bit as well. It was just incredible. And so it's just so awesome to be able to see something like that. It never ceases to amaze, at least for me, and I'm sure a lot of you feel the same way. But the other thing I was thinking about this topic is that every time I seem to try to take a photo of what I see at night, it just never seems to turn out very well. It just doesn't do justice to what I'm seeing. And thankfully, we have some help with that tonight with our guest, John Milligan, who's going to be joining us. And he's going to be giving us some advice. If you've seen his work, if you go to the Uncharted website, you can see some of the things he's posted, some of the great work he's done with night photography, Northern Lights and galaxies, stars. It's just incredible how he captures that. I've never come close to something like that. So I'm hoping to learn a little bit from him tonight, because I'm with you, all of you out there listening. I could be a lot better with capturing the night sky, and there's not many people that'd be much better to reach out to than John, and he's just such a great guy. So, and just to formally introduce him, I'd like to give you a quick snapshot of who he is. He's an engineer, and he works in research and development as a director of research and development, and has worked in the biofuels, water treatment, and home services industries. And he spent an extensive time living in Asia, Southeast Asia, South Asia, and Germany. So he's really been all over. And we had him on the show in an earlier episode talking about learning new languages, which was a great discussion. If you haven't heard that one, go back and definitely fire that up and listen to his advice there too. He grew up farming, and he's been photographing the stars for over a decade. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome John to the show. How are you doing, John?
Hey, I'm doing great. That's a great story, flying through the Northern Lights. I'm pretty jealous. I hope to do that sometime.
Oh yeah. It's just so cool. It's just one of those things words can't describe, and I'm sure you have felt that same way about the things that you've seen, with you know, the weird hours of the night and the dark places you've been looking up at.
That's
the stars,
right?
So it probably rivals, if not exceeds, what I experienced that night. So on that note, if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about yourself, how you got started in night photography.
Sure. You know, a lot like you, just looking up at that sky. But now I've been photographing the Milky Way for over a decade, and that doesn't sound like that long, but really photographing the Milky Way isn't that old, but there are some people that have done it longer. And for me, it started with at a moment at a place called Tony Grove Lake, and it's about just over 8,000 feet in elevation up in the Bear River Range in Utah. And I was walking away from the lake late one night when I had this feeling to turn around. And I did, just in time to see this massive meteor just streak across the sky.
Oh, wow.
And it was just full of color. You could see the actual meteor, and it took up the better portion of the southern sky. You could see greens and blues and oranges. And it was just absolutely unforgettable. And I'm so glad I turned around. But I wished I could have captured it with more than just a memory. And even now my memory is fading a little bit, but I'll never forget how it felt, you know?
Oh yeah. And what an experience.
Yeah. So that kind of stuck with me. And a number of years later, really the grandfather of night photography, Royce Baer, again, my hero, I saw a photo he had taken. And I thought, man, I want to do that. So I grabbed my old Canon 7D that, you know, you'll learn this as you come and get taught about photography, but it's not a full frame camera. And that's the kind of camera you really want to have for night photography. It was a cropped sensor, and really more of a camera for action. But regardless, I went back to the same lake where I'd seen that. And when the Milky Way first came through, I could see it with my eyes, which is actually kind of rare. Most, I'd say, yeah, there's statistics that say 99% of people can't see the Milky Way where they live, and maybe only somewhere between 60 to 80% of of the country has not seen the Milky Way. So if you've seen the Milky Way, you're ahead of a lot of people. And I was able to see that with my naked eye, and I hit the settings that Royce suggested, and I saw it show up on my screen, and I just can't explain the way that felt. It was like just discovering the secret world above us. And it was just a sense of awe and a sense of stillness that really stayed with me ever since. And most people, they don't realize how accessible Milky Way photography really can be. And you don't need high-end gear. Back then, you needed to spend a lot more money. But now you can get some used cameras that do really well. And most full frames are going to do great. And you can, like I say, you can get an older one for, you know, $400. And back in the day, you know, you're going to put out some money for that. But now you really just need a little guidance and a reason to try.
Okay. Yeah. The technology has come so far. It's just amazing how much technology we have in our little hands now. You know, everything has become smaller and more powerful as over time. It's just amazing what you can do nowadays. And, but on that note, you know, kind of getting into that topic of getting started, and, you know, if somebody's looking at getting started, what was your advice be for somebody who's thinking about this, or has thought about, you know, maybe it'd be cool to get into some night photography? How would you advise them to get going, and you know, how do you get started?
You know, it's not much different than how I got started. The most important thing of starting anything is taking the first step. You know, the first step of any great adventure or small adventure is just getting out your front door. So the first way to start is to get moving. Even if you don't have a camera, the first thing to do is research on the web and go to, there's a lot of places on the web that can show you where dark skies are and when the Milky Way's out. And we can help you find that and put you in the right place. But, you know, get out there and go see it at least with your own eyes. And if you have enough money to get a camera, you know, a lot of iPhones now, they can kind of do it. I kind of like to still have a full frame camera. There's a lot of them out there. I typically shot Canon. There's the Canon 6D, and you can get a lot of those used now for really cheap, and they're great. And you just need that. You need there's different kinds of lenses, but if you don't want to spend a lot of money, there's one that I call Rokinon lens. Some people say Rokinon. And those are about, you know, $200. They're you can get those where they're manual focus, and that's fine, because at night you're not focusing. You only have to focus once. And so you really don't need autofocus. And so you can keep that price down. But what's really important is a good solid tripod. You don't want to have any kind of movement in there. And once you have that, you really have what you need to really go get started. But if you don't have that, and all you can do is take your cell phone and take I've tried just putting my coat on the hood and putting it there if I forgot all that, and just try it and get started just like that.
Okay. Yeah. And good point about the tripod. I've kind of fumbled around with that in photography before, where I bought a pretty crummy tripod and it actually wasn't very still, and I was doing this video stuff. So, but I imagine with nighttime, with the exposure being so much longer, it really makes a difference in having a good tripod, right?
And it really does. And, you know, if you're going to go out and buy a tripod and you're going to put the money down, I'm going to suggest you get a carbon fiber tripod instead of an aluminum tripod. Now, if you have an aluminum, go use it. But what happens at night is the wind, it changes temperatures and it blows a little bit. And it can cause minimal vibration on your tripod legs, actually. And if you're doing really long exposure and you become what we call a pixel peeper, where you're really looking closely at your photo, it might kind of come up on you. But those carbon fiber tripods, they have what, you know, an engineer, we would say it can damp vibrations better than aluminum. And so that's really why I like carbon fiber, is its ability to damp vibrations.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So going back to, you know, you talked about some, how you got involved, and I'm curious, any other reasons why somebody out there listening might want to, I don't know, be up at 2 o'clock in the morning like you do? And
I hear you. And you know, there's a little bit of fear there, right? You get out there in the middle of the night and there you are. It's always good to have someone with you, for sure. I've had people, you know, for years ask me to do this, the course that we're going to teach. And so I finally decided to do it, but not like a typical, you know, workshop. And this is kind of going to your point, maybe in a little longer way than you wish, but this isn't just about, you know, we call it ISO and shutter speed. Those are some of the settings that you'll have, but it, you know, you might want to try it for a little different reason than you might expect. I work in innovation and R&D, and I like to help, I get to help my organization unlock creativity and build systems that turn ideas into action. And what I've learned is, whether it's business or photography, innovation really starts with curiosity, and building curiosity really helps you. And it kind of, it breaks us out of this Google search world where we just type in Google and get an answer. You know, you might want to try this if you're feeling a little bored with life, or you're feeling like you're stuck. You know, I treat the night like a creative lab, you know, where you get to learn to test, experiment, explore it. And photography really becomes less about, you know, perfection and more about discovery. And we'll get you to that point, and you might want to start doing it so you can get your first Milky Way photo and see what that feels like, because it sure felt amazing to me when I saw my first one. It's just hard to explain. It really touches your soul. And really, more importantly, you see the world in a different way.
And
you see the universe, and it's crazy how you just suddenly have this perspective of yourself and the universe, and you see how big and endless and infinite the universe is, and how, you know, how large our world is, but how small it seems, but you still feel important.
Yeah, it really makes you reflect, and just, you know, taking that in is just such a great experience. And it's always different too. It's just, you're never going to have the exact same, you know, scenery. You know, a lot of places that, you know, I just went to Yosemite, right? And I've been there a few times now. This was like my fourth or fifth time, I think, going. And you know,
that's awesome.
It's an incredible. I mean, it's majestic every time I've gone. It's majestic, but you know, I've seen Half Dome. I've hiked to the top of it. It's like kind of like been there, done that. But you look at the stars, and you go out at night, and there's a different painting in the sky like every night, right? There's always something. It's the colors. It's the arrangement of the stars at that particular latitude at that particular time of night. It's, you know, maybe there's some clouds, and maybe there's, you know, some other things going on, but it's just beautiful every single time in its own way, and it's different almost every single time. It just, I guess maybe to some of the very astute astronomers, they might get a little bit bored with it sometimes, but for my, you know, basic mind and eyes, I love taking it in whenever I can. And, you know, it always seems to be one of those things that I wish I did more often. I wish I slowed down and just took it in more often. And I guess, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons for doing what you're doing, John, is you do it, and you do that. You do slow down and take it in, and it kind of gives you a reason to. It gives you motivation to, right?
Right. I had the opportunity to take some courses just in innovation through the MIT program, and one of the things they say about innovation is you need to find a place of stillness. And here's maybe an unexpected thing that you're going to get from photographing the Milky Way. You start asking different kinds of questions when you're out there that you might not think to ask during the day when everything's so busy. And maybe these are a little personal, but these are things that sometimes I think about. I think, you know, what would I try if I wasn't afraid of failing? Or what's been holding me back? Or what do I actually want to create, not just in photography, but in life? Or where else in my life do I need to pause and see differently? And really, when you're underneath the Milky Way, it's kind of funny to say it's a space because we're under space, but really it's this space, and it just invites that stillness and perspective that we were talking about earlier, where the innovation spark for your life really begins, and you start to think of these questions, and sometimes you might even feel a little bit of inspiration of what you might do next in your life that you otherwise don't do because you're just too busy during the day. And that is the core of why I would say you should try to take pictures of the Milky Way, if for no other reason than to really explore yourself.
That's so great. I love it. And, you know, I think about the hiker. I think about like when we were just out in Yosemite, right? We were just hiking all day, trying to get from point A to point B, get up to the top, you know, and we were, did a bunch of hikes that week. And, you know, I remember walking to my cabin, you know, in Curry Village there, those canvas tents. And I was just walking through the little tent village and I look up at the stars, and then all of a sudden there's like all these stars. And I was like, oh my goodness, it's so cool. And
you're sharing that with your family too.
Yeah. And
wow.
You know, but I kind of went off and did my thing, my next thing. Right. And I, you know, I would love to go back and just take it in some more. And, I think that's all a great point, John, what you shared. And, I think probably now we want to get into a little bit of nitty gritties. I was looking at your story about the Northern Lights photos that you took recently. Just great. Again, if you're listening, if you haven't seen those photos, it's on the Uncharted website. If you you can find John's profile and look at his stuff there, or go to the Explore section and you can see it there too. But anyways, you've got some great tips. And by the way, if you're listening and you go to the story, you do need to sign in to be able to access the whole story that John shared with us, all of his advice and tips about photographing the Northern Lights in particular. But a lot of his advice applies to, you know, night photography in general as well in a lot of ways. But I just thought it was really great to read through your experience and also your advice and your tips there. One of the things that really hit me, I mean, it makes sense, but obviously location matters, you know, you want to be away from light pollution and all that. But you were talking about, you know, it gets into more detail than that. Things like the dark sky scale and, you know, just finding good spots to be able to, you know, take it in and also capture it if you're doing the photography. So you could talk a little bit about location and how that works with what you do.
Yeah, sure. Yep. Well, location and timing. One thing is, so when we think of cities, and as I was saying earlier, it's really hard to see the Milky Way because there's so much light pollution in cities, and that's kind of becoming a problem. We're becoming disconnected with the universe in a way. And so one of the important things is to get away from those lights. Now, in the West, it's a little easier than the East, but there's different rankings of darkness, and it's the Bortle scale, right? And so like somewhere that was in Antarctica might be a Bortle 1, just somewhere that there is absolutely no possible human light. And
the lower number is the better one.
Correct.
Okay, yep. Clear. Okay.
And you know, Southern Utah, you're in a lot of Bortle too, which is just phenomenal. You can see the dust lanes of the Milky Way. You can see them with your naked eye. It's so amazing to just see those stars hanging there and see all that detail that you normally don't see. But Bortle 3 is a little more common, and you can still do a lot of night photography in a Bortle 3, but a lot of us snobby people, we try to get to a Bortle 2.
Okay.
But there are methods to, if you're in a really bright area, that you can work with, and that's something we can discuss, but that's kind of what you're shooting for.
Okay. Yeah, and then, you know, time of the day, time of night,
The full
weather.
moon, you're just not going to see it. Now,
Sure.
the full moon now will it'll light up the foreground, and you'll see, you can still have a lot of fun with a full moon. It's just you're not going to see the Milky Way so much.
Yeah, you might be, you know, photographing terrain or something, you know, at that point, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Neat. Okay.
Reflections, a lot of fun things. You can light up the foreground with low-level lighting techniques, a lot of fun. Lots of things you can do.
Is there like a kind of like a holy grail I mean, you were talking about like, okay, Antarctica has a level one, but
Sure.
you know, what are some of the more popular places that night photographers typically try to get to?
Sure. Now, I'm familiar with the West and the United States, and so I will tell you, one of my favorite places is Kanab, Utah. There's just so much around there within 70 miles that it's just, I mean, it's endless opportunity. It's great. You can go to Moab too. There's a lot of good stuff there, but I love Kanab. That's where you'll see the Nightscaper convention. That's a lot of fun. They'll be there a lot of times, and there's so much you can learn there. I sure had fun at that convention with there's people there that, you know, all they do is they there's one guy, he studies gravity waves, and so he photographs the Milky Way every night in the Atacama Desert, you know, and just it's
Oh,
amazing what you
wow.
can learn from those people like that.
Yeah.
But it's just, I would say Kanab is probably one of those places that there's a lot of them like that, but Southern Utah is kind of really well known for that kind of thing. There's a lot of places in the West, Montana, Idaho, really, even in Oregon, there's some stuff there that is phenomenal. It's really all over California, Arizona. It's all over the West, really the side of the Mississippi. You've got a lot of, you know, you see some incredible images in the Dakotas and kind of all over the place there. And I'm sure you've seen it too there in Michigan. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's and you mentioned Arizona. One of my favorite memories was out if you're familiar with Sierra Vista. I was about northeast of Sierra Vista out in this wildlife
Sure.
refuge area, and
Yeah.
it was just amazing that night. And yeah, I'm actually shopping for a house. I might be looking up your dark sky scale here.
That's right.
See,
Yeah.
make sure I wind up in a good spot.
Yeah.
Again, I've got a good view where I'm at now, but so I don't wanna go down or I guess
Yeah.
up in the number scale. So,
Sure.
yeah.
And a place like Sierra Vista that has just a little more elevation than Tucson, even though you know, and it's far enough away, that's going to be a great spot too out there. So, yeah.
Now, equipment, you delved into that a little bit. Do you have anything else on equipment? Somebody especially that's new or just getting rolling, you know, what do you do? Obviously there's going to be varying degrees of getting involved with this. There's going to be the people that go super gung-ho like you're doing, but then
Right.
there's those of us who might just want to, you know, take a snap with our mobile device or something, and
Right.
you know,
Yep.
what advice do you have as far as equipment goes?
Yeah, so with a camera, with whatever you do, whether it's a, you know, whether it's an iPhone or whatnot, I have an iPhone 14, and I try to do it. I'm just a little snobby. I still like my full frame, but they actually do pretty good. But the key is, again, you've got to have them anchored in some way that you're not going to have movement when you're taking the image. Really, it's so I still recommend a mirrorless or a DSLR camera with, and you know, you're going to be shooting in manual mode. You're going to have a wide angle lens. And if you have the lens, you really want an f/2.8 or faster. That's just kind of a good rule of thumb. I've seen a lot of f/4 stuff work okay. So, you know, you just kind of have to play around. But a sturdy tripod. Another thing I'm going to say, so this is kind of a west versus east. Out in the west, I prefer a headlamp with a dimmable white light. And that is a little different than an astronomer may say that they would say a red light. And in the east, they might actually have laws where you have to use a red light. I prefer the non-red light because if you accidentally leave it on, it can kind of get out into your shot, and it's a little bit hard to edit out, where the white light is easy to deal with. So I prefer a dimmable white light, extra batteries, memory cards, you know, warm clothes for sure. It's going to cool off on you. Snacks, water, maybe something to sit on. Probably the most important thing to have is an adventurous spirit. I think that's probably the most important thing.
It's like Linus and Sally waiting for the great pumpkin to come at night. Right? You
That's
know,
right.
sitting out there and waiting for this amazing thing to happen, and it takes hours for it to happen.
It's really nice to have somebody with you, and that's kind of the rule of you know, being outside and being out in the wilderness is to go with two people. I don't want to scare people away, but sometimes you see glowing eyes out there, so it's a nice to have another person. And yeah, I've never had any problems with them, but you know, if you're alone, your imagination might run a little bit wild. So
Yeah,
it's
I'm
really
gonna
good to
back
have
you up on
someone.
that. I'm gonna back you up on that. A time where I got stuck, my car had gotten broken down. It's a little bit of a long story in and of itself, but I was out hiking around in the woods in California, and I had to walk back home basically from where I was, which was a long hike. And all of a sudden, middle of the night, right, here come the coyote howls. So I take out my knife and I'm like, shake my hand shaking, like wondering what I'm going to have to do next. Are these coyotes going to come attack me? And I'm like, oh man, this is not how I want my life to end.
I
So,
know.
it would be
I
nice
got
to
the
have
two.
another fighter there with me up at my side to back me up.
I might run on you. No, just kidding. No, I got between a cow elk and a bull elk, and really, it was amazing. If you've ever heard a bull elk bugle, I don't know if
I
there's a
have
more
not,
majestic
no.
sound than the bull elk bugling in the mountains. And there, you could just hear him right there, but you could also see the cow, and I could see her reflection in her eyes, and she was moving to the bull, and the bull was moving. I'm like, oh boy, I hope I'm not right in between these two. But luckily they found themselves a little far away from me, you know, so that worked out. But yeah, sometimes, you know, but that's an amazing experience that I had when everyone else was asleep. They say in the
Oh, yeah.
national parks that, you know, in the daytime you only see half the park. You know, you got to be out there at night to see the rest of it.
Great point, absolutely. The other thing is at night your mind kind of freaks out a little bit more than it normally does.
So true.
So there is that too. So yeah, have somebody join you. That might
We
help. That
all
might
act
help.
brave until the glowing eyes are hovering just a little ways off.
That's some great advice there, John, on the equipment and even the cell phone bit there. There's a lot to all of this. If again, I point you all listening to his night photography article there. What anything about methods? Any other thing you want to share about, how you go about this? So you got the right location and timing, you got the good equipment, you got, settings all the way it needs to be. Anything else about, how you would recommend somebody, getting started, especially, how they would go about making sure they're using some methods that will get him some success.
Sure. One of the best ways to do that is to go there when it's bright during the daytime. Now, you can't always do that because you're planning to go somewhere far away, but I usually try to go during the daytime. And I bring, there's a lot of apps. One of the good ones is Photo Pills. A lot of people have heard of that. And you can use the night AR, and it will show you exactly where the Milky Way will be. So you know exactly when to come, and you can actually take a picture of where the Milky Way will be at what time, and then you take that picture in your phone, and that helps you plan. Hey, I say you want to have this tree in the shot, or you want to, you know, you want to have, you want to line it up a certain way, and that's one way that you can kind of get ahead of that and make sure you're going to go get the image that your creative mind is trying to show somebody else. And, you know, making sure that, here's the other thing. I remember when I first bought my Canon 7D, I bought it just before I went to Shanghai, actually. And I think you've been there, and there's the Bund, you know.
Oh, yeah,
the Bund. Yeah. So I'm across the way, looking across the way at Pudong, with the Bund, which is the financial district of Shanghai, which is a phenomenal view. And I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, how do I use this thing? And I got lucky. And one of the, there was a photographer there that was from their newspaper, and he showed me a few settings. So I was able to use my camera. But that teaches you something. You've got to know what settings you need to have before you get there. That's so important. And know how to use your camera. So even if you have to go out and test it, just do small tests out at night. Even if you can't see the stars, just get out there and make sure you know how to do it. You can do it in your backyard. You can do it in a park somewhere. Set up your tripod. Just go do a small test. So when the Milky Way is getting in position, you're not stressed out about those kind of things, and you kind of know what you're going to do. One of the most important things, though, is to understand how to focus and get those tack sharp stars. And so sometimes people will go beforehand and they'll focus on a peak or some object as far away as they can, because you just have to be focused at infinity, and infinity isn't that far away for a camera lens. And so as far away as you can see, that's plenty close to infinity. So you can tape your lens there so it'll be focused, or you can use your screen on the back and you can focus in on a bright star, and you'll go past it and come forward, rotate forth and back until you get the star just as small as it possibly can be. And that'll give you that nice tack sharp star. But then you have to understand how long to expose. Some people say a 500 rule. I think it's more of a 300 rule. So I think you divide the length of your lens by 300, and that gives you a lot less star trailing. If you leave it open too long, then the stars will just streak across the sky, and you might not get what you wanted to have. So those are some things I would say to understand before you go.
Great. Yeah. Appreciate that, John. And, you know, we could go into a lot of detail, you know, looking just at your one article there, and you're just a fountain of knowledge. I would just say, go ahead, check out his article. And we also have a couple other things coming up here as far as help for anybody who might be interested in finding out more about night photography and maybe trying it for yourself. But before we get to that, John, if you could just one last question before we move on to those kind of nitty gritty details, just tell me about one of your other favorite experiences you've had out there capturing the night sky.
I think meteor shower that that year there was about, I think it was 360 an hour that were coming. And I went back up to a mountain lake, and I shot directly north because they call it the radiant, which is where the meteor shower radiate from. And this one is in August, and it's just a phenomenal one. It's there every year. It's the one that everybody likes to go out to and photograph. And a lot of people go and sit on their cars and watch these come in. They help for those low burners that just really are just so beautiful to see them streak across the sky. And I decided to set up on a beach and camp there all night, taking images of all of these comets just coming in, or sorry, not comets, meteors. I wish it was comets. those are great too, but you don't see a lot of those at the same time. Those are pretty rare.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I set up my tripod looking directly at the North Star, because there's, you know, some people will tell you, hey, I didn't use Photoshop for this image, or I didn't do that. And you know, sometimes if you don't use photo editing, I say you didn't really capture the image, because it depends on the settings you're shooting in and whatnot. But sometimes you need to do some editing to bring it back, like you were saying at the beginning, to show what you saw and to communicate to the world what you saw. And when you have to remember that the Earth is spinning rather quickly, and maybe you as a pilot know more about that than I do. I assume you do.
My head is often spinning pretty quickly too, but that's another story.
Yeah, I'm jealous. Someday I want to ride up in the plane with you at night and see that.
Yeah, we need to do it sometime.
That'd be great. Oh, I'm in. I am totally.
Come out here
someday.
To Michigan. Yeah,
we'll do it. I will come out there. So I wanted to shoot this scene, and I wanted it to be true to the rotation of space and not the rotation of Earth. And so what I did is I set up and I made the North Star the center of my image. This is kind of complex. But what I did is I shot about 720 images that night, and I took all of the images and I stacked them together, but I rotated each image so that the stars were all aligned. So I shot it true to the rotation of space rather than the rotation of the Earth, or true to space rather than true to Earth. And so if you shoot it just, you know, from the Earth, and you don't account for the fact that the Earth is spinning, the stars will all look really randomized. They don't look like there's no order at all, but there is. And they radiate from a certain place. And when you do that, it looks like an explosion of stars coming right out of the, what they call the radiant of the meteor shower. And just putting that together was so fun. And to see it true to space, you know, I felt a lot of pride. And,
yeah,
you know, it took a lot of time and a lot of planning. I mean, I planned for months. I hiked to different places. I went out and I looked, where am I going to do it this time? You know, and you had to hunt your space. You went and tested. And when I finally got to it, it was just like the night went by so fast, and I didn't sleep a wink. I went the whole night, and it was, you know, 6 a.m. all of a sudden. I'm like, what, how did that go? And, but it was so amazing. Just, you know, as I set it on auto, leaning back on the beach and listening, you know, to the wind and those pines and seeing those meteors just going streaking over my head, just one after another. It was so magical, just amazing.
What a great experience. Thanks for sharing that with us. That's awesome, man. Good thing it all turned out too. You know, good after all that work.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, I always make things too hard.
No, well, it's one of those. You know, you get what you put in. You know, you get out of it what you put in. Right. So, awesome. Well, let's talk about coming up here. You got some things that I know you've got cooking, and we're really excited to share this with the audience. And it's one of the reasons we really wanted to make sure we got this episode out there finally is because we've got this, these things coming up, John. You're going to be having a workshop to help anybody interested in digging into this some more. I mean, obviously, there's only so much we can do with a, you know, hour-long podcast on this topic. And then, obviously, getting hands-on experience is a great way to learn anything. So this is really exciting, John, what you're going to be doing here, this workshop, photographing the Milky Way galaxy, right?
Right. Yeah. So I'll tell you this. One of the great things about, you know, you can get on YouTube and you can have someone say, hey, this is how you do the Milky Way. It's a different thing to actually go do it and to have somebody there to walk you through it and make sure that, you know, you're set up right. But one of the best things about going to a class like this is that you find other people who also do it. And then they can be that second person when you go up and shoot the Milky Way again, or a third person, you know, or however many people you want to bring in the future. So you're not alone. So I would say that's actually kind of the unexpected thing that you get from something like this. And yeah, then
one more person to fight the coyotes.
Yeah. And then on top of that, we're going to, we'll have the uncharted.net. We'll have a special group for this. So after you're done, we'll be able to also walk you through how to do the editing, and we'll continue to be able to answer your questions and be involved. And when I say we, that's because we're going to try to sneak out another friend of mine who's he's a great photographer. He's been a photo editor from a few papers, and he's going to fly in from Pennsylvania to help out with this. So and he's really quite he's an awarded photographer, so it's a great opportunity to have a couple of us. We're going to keep it short. We're going to limit how many people are there so that we can have the proper hands-on instruction. So there, we're only going to let so many people do it, so you're going to need to jump on this. But it'll be on May 23rd, and we're going to ask you to get out there about 7 o'clock out to the location. And then we'll just keep shooting, until we're done. And that could be pretty late. But we want to get out there before the sun goes down so we can get you all set up and talk you through some things. And so we're relaxed and calm, and, you know, we can just kind of enjoy the time. And, it'll be, at a place called Franklin Basin. So I'm in Logan, Utah. So I'm going to try to be around where I've shot a lot. And Franklin Basin is a great spot where it's pretty dark. It's nice and dark. You can see the Milky Way really well. I've had great images out of that area. There's another place that's called Red Rock Pass, and it's the north end. It's in Idaho, but Logan, Utah is in a valley called Cache Valley, and it's at the north end of Cache Valley, where this Lake Bonneville a long time ago broke through, and there was this massive lake out here in the west until that earth dam failed. And right there, right where that earth dam failed, is what we now call Red Rock Pass. And it's got some nice imagery there, some good foreground, and it's really nice and dark. It's a Bortle 2 area. We'll probably shoot for that first, but just depending on snow melt and weather, we'll probably go between one of these two places, and we'll confirm the site as we get closer. There could be a different fallback position too. We're even close enough that if we had to, we could go out even to the Salt Flats. We probably won't, but probably stay more in the Logan area. A lot of times people will charge about $500-$600 for something like this. We're going to keep it affordable for regular folks like me. And, we're going to keep it at $100. And that's a really good deal for having that kind of, in-person time and then editing, coaching, and continuing to have that ongoing group. And we'll give you, discounts at future Uncharted, events. And so it'll be hands-on instruction. We'll give you a gear checklist. We'll give you safety preparation. We'll have optional. We'll have post event editing and access to our Uncharted.net group. So that's what you'll get out of it.
Okay, great. That's I wish I could go. John, I'm going to be, I would totally take you up on that too. It's going to be when I'm in Asia, unfortunately. But for all of you,
Where are you going in Asia, out of curiosity?
I'm going to Taiwan again. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, back to my kind of home away from home. You know,
okay.
Chinese Mandarin this time, unlike Hong Kong, which was Cantonese, and I should have learned Cantonese when I was there, but didn't. Regret that.
Learned Cantonese with its seven tones. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. You've got a lot of ambition.
But not a lot of time or whatever.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll catch you another time, John, but any of you listening out there, this is going to be great. We're going to have that information posted on the website. Actually, if you can go to it right now, if you're listening before May 23rd of 2025, we have the Learn section of the website. So you go to uncharted.net, go to the Learn section, and you look for the Milky Way Galaxy Night Photography Workshop, and it will be posted there for all the details and to register, to sign up, and to go. And John also mentioned the night photography group. So if you go to the groups section of the Uncharted website, there's a night photography group there. You can sign up for that. And John and some others will be posting information specific to night photography, and it's a good way for you to stay connected to John leading up to this or after the event as well. And for anybody listening that, you know, you're interested in this, but you just couldn't go, or you're just now listening to the podcast and it's already happened, that night photography group will be a great way to stay connected with John and any others that are in that community that are going to be sharing their ideas and advice and, you know, events and things like that, all surrounding night photography. One of our goals with Uncharted is try to bring people together and that want to go explore the Uncharted, and this is definitely one of these efforts that John has been leading the charge in, and we would love to see a lot more connections made. And hopefully anybody out there that's listening, if you want to get some one-on-one help, this is a great opportunity to do it through this workshop. And then going forward, hopefully we'll be doing even more in the future. So, anything
can
else?
Can I give one little plug here?
And yes,
maybe
absolutely.
This is a little more high level, and you got to deal with my love of innovation, but this is why if you're kind of teetering and you're wondering, should I do this? Shouldn't I do it? Here's my thing to you. This is a lot more than a class. It's really just a chance to relax, to step back from your life for a minute and step into something a little bigger, a lot bigger. And it's a time that you can have that moment that can really change everything. I believe that creativity is one of the things that we're losing in society, but it's one of the most powerful forces we have. And it's not just for art, but really it's for your own personal life's perspective. It can help heal you mentally. It can help you grow. It can give meaning to your life. And there's this really special story, and I'll just make it super short, but after World War II, there was a man who found the shard of a mirror from a motorcycle, just a little piece of it, and he kept it in his pocket. And over time, he kept that with him, and he began using it to reflect sunlight into dark corners and cracks. And eventually he learned something from that little broken piece of glass. He learned that, he said, I'm not the light, but I can reflect light into places where it otherwise wouldn't reach. And that is exactly what this workshop is about. It's about helping you and helping ourselves reflect light back into our work and back into our lives, and back into ourselves and our families and people we love and care about. So if you've ever looked up and thought, you know, I wish I could capture that, this is your chance. And it's designed for you. It's designed for real people. And we're going to go to just good, great places. And we're, we've got a good place planned. So if you want to create something meaningful and walk away with a real photo that you capture, and also hopefully you capture an experience, this is that chance.
Awesome. Great. Thank you for that. What more reason do you need to have now to go? That's just, I regret that I can't make it, John. So
sometime I'm going to catch up with you. You're going to bring me in that plane, and
that's right.
After we land safely, we will go up into the wild areas of Michigan, and we'll find some good spots.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. That'll be awesome.
Yeah.
I'd love to do it. So sign up for his workshop there, Uncharted/Learn. If you can't make it, sign up for the night photography, even if you can make it too. There's that night photography group. Stay connected to us there if night photography is piquing your interest. Anything else that you're looking forward to as far as major night sky events or anything that you're anticipating for this new year of 2025?
This new year, you'll catch that same meteor shower August, I think, 11th through the 13th. So just be watching for that. Try to plan a way to get to a dark sky, do some research, get to a Bortle 2 or 3. Look to the north, and you will see it.
All right.
And Perseid. You can enjoy it.
Yeah, Perseid, yes. Right?
Correct.
We were actually looking that up earlier, how to properly pronounce Percy.
Yeah, I've avoided it because I'm so bad at saying it. I can photograph it, I just can't say it.
Yeah.
But it comes from the Perseus, it comes from the Perseus constellation, and that's where it radiates from. So it's pretty cool.
Neat, yeah. Okay, well, that's awesome stuff you've shared with us, John. I really appreciate you coming on to the show and sharing your passion for exploring the uncharted, exploring the universe by photographing the night sky. It's made me a lot more excited about it and wanting to be involved. I hope that all of you listening, you have a chance to connect with John, whether that's through the Uncharted site or at his workshop in person, even better. We'll be posting show notes for all of the links that we discussed talking to John here, and also the registration and all that. That will be posted in the show notes, so that'll be there for your convenience. If you have any questions, by all means, reach out to us on that night photography group, or in general, you can always contact us at our staff at uncharted.net email address as well. But before we conclude, I got a couple other items I wanted to share with you. Number one, coming back from Yosemite, all that warm weather, and then having the snow on the return trip after getting home, it was kind of reminding me of February weather, and it's actually already April right now. It's hard to believe with the snow flying today, but it is about the right temperatures for tapping maple syrup trees. And I know we've shared that story on the Uncharted website before, my experience doing that. One year we actually did some tapping of our black walnut trees. I don't know if any of you realize, but you can get syrup out of black walnut trees just like you can a maple tree. And it is actually really, really good. In fact, I may like it more than maple syrup, to believe it or not. It tastes just like maple syrup, but it has a little bit of a kind of a nutty flavor to it. Maybe some of my affinity for this is how much work I had to put into this. You actually have to burn a lot more of the, you have to evaporate a lot more of the black walnut syrup in order to of the sap. You have to evaporate more of the black walnut sap to get the amount of syrup that you would want to get than compared to maple syrup, which is you get more bang for your buck with the maple syrup. So it's harder work, But it does taste really good. But maybe the reason I like it so much is because of how much hard work I had to, we had to put into it. But I've got a little quick recording here of my kids and I having our first experience tapping for black walnut syrup. So listen up, and we'll be right back. Take a quick break.
Look, black walnut.
Oh, it's sap. It's already coming out. Okay, need you, Lise. Can you put this in there? Look, look, the sap's coming. Get a bucket, get a bucket, hurry. Put that in here, like, just like that. Here. Let's go like
Daddy,
this.
The bucket's okay. Frozen.
Can you put it in the hole?
Daddy,
hurry.
The
Elise.
Frozen.
Elise, put it in the hole. Yep. Get it in there real good. Okay. Now, Gavin, can you take the hammer and you can tap this in?
Okay.
Just hit it right here.
I know why it's called a tap, because you tap it in.
Yeah. Hit it right there. Keep going.
Daddy, the bucket's so frozen. Daddy, I can't get the bucket out.
Okay, that's good. Now, one of you needs to hang the bucket on that.
That's the last time we hold them.
Yeah.
Mommy, that's the last time. Mommy, wait, put in the second one and Jordan's ripping out.
Whoa, that's a great job. Get those pulled out. Okay, one of you needs to hang it. All right, now somebody get a lid.
It's coming. Get a lid.
Okay, so yeah, that was the experience with the tapping of the black walnut trees in our yard, and what a great experience that was, especially to taste it at the end. And we might do it again one of these times, but definitely the maple syrup is a little bit easier process. Nothing like the real stuff. It's not that Aunt Jemima kind of stuff you get in the store. It's great, tastes good. But anyways, one last thing for the gear section. I don't have a whole lot prepared for that. We kind of threw this podcast together last minute. But what I will say is if any of you are dog owners out there, I wanted to share this with you. This is going to be kind of me sharing my experience along the way. I'll probably do another one in a future episode and tell you how things have gone with this. But I have a Alaskan Malamute dog. And John, are you familiar with Malamutes at all?
Yeah, they're the kind of dogs that tend to take you for a walk.
Exactly. Yeah, from the Inuit days to today, I mean, no difference. They just want to go, and they want to drag you with them, and they love it. I mean, absolutely love running, walking, dragging you, you know, through the snow. It's just what they love to do. It's just amazing, and they love to explore, and that's part of the reason I love the Malamute so much is because they're kind of like me. They love exploring. Well, the downside to that, as you can imagine, is they like to explore, you know, whether you want them to or not. So they can be trained very well. It takes a lot of work to train them, but they are extremely intelligent. They're up there with like German Shepherds and whatnot as far as intelligence goes. They're really super smart dogs. But with that comes, you know, they will take off on you, and they won't always recall very well in that. So we're always worried we're going to lose our Malamute. So I got this little, I was like, okay, if something happens and she doesn't recall very well, at least I'll have a tracker and I'll be able to find the dog. So I was like, there's all these tracker. I don't know if you've ever searched for a tracker for a dog, but I mean, it's a huge industry. It's like, it was mind blowing. It was just made, I was talking about my mind, you know, getting dizzy before. I mean, just, this was one of those times like, holy cow, there's so many options. There's all these like, get a cell phone subscription, and then there's ones that are radio based, and then there's GPS ones and all this. And so I ended up just kind of getting frustrated, but I ended up finding this one that it doesn't require any subscription. It is GPS based, and you can, you know, track your dog on your phone. So if my dog, you know, takes off on me, leaves somewhere, I can't find her, I can go on the phone and see where she's. It's just this little thing that goes on her collar, and it picks up a signal, and the cell, and you don't have to pay for a subscription. It's called Pit Pat. So we're gonna see how this goes. I'll update you if my dog ends up getting lost and I have to go out finding her and see how well this thing actually works or doesn't. So that's my latest find. But I just thought it was cool because there's so many that require subscriptions or like these complicated, you know, $200-$300 radios with homing beacons and all this crazy stuff, right? But this one, it might be a good find. I don't know. We'll kind of test it and kind of review along the way. And if anything happens, I'll update you in a future episode in the podcast.
Right. And that's so your wife can find where the dog took you on a walk to. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like my cell phone. That was one of the reasons I didn't want to get a cell phone when they were first coming out, is like, well, then, you know, people will be able to get a hold of me when I don't want to be gotten hold of, you know, or they'll be able to track me or something. So yeah, this is a yet another tracking device that we all have, you know. Now my dog has one, so we'll see how it goes. But Pit Pat is that find there. So I'm not necessarily recommending it. I'm just telling you what's going on, and we'll see how it goes. But I think it's a great idea. I think anything that limits subscriptions and limits, you know, kind of the expense of it. I think I paid like, I don't know, it was like $150 or something. So. But since it's one time, hopefully that means it's a good deal. We'll see. So that's all we have time for. Thanks for joining us again on the Uncharted Podcast. John, do you have anything else to add before we close?
No, I think we've pretty well covered it, but I look forward to whoever's going to be out there, and we'll sure have some fun together. And I just get excited about this time of year. It's so nice to see the stars, and it's really the time of year you want to get out there and start seeing it before you start to see some of the wildfire smoke come in, and that can cause a little fits later in the year. So this is the chance to get out there, and you know, if you're not able to make this date, let us know, and maybe we'll be able to make some other opportunities.
Great. Yeah, I'll be super excited to hear how it goes. Hope several of you out there listening are able to join in and have a great experience with it. And we'll talk about it afterwards. So again, that's going to be May 23rd at night. And all the details will be on the website at uncharted.net in the Learn section. Again, thanks for listening to the Uncharted Podcast. We'll be trying to do these hopefully more regularly going forward. And just want to give another shout out to all of you who have shared your experiences with us. That's another thing you can do with the Uncharted site. It's not just about us here on the podcast, but anybody out there who's listening that wants to share your advice, your experiences, photos you've taken, places you've gone, things you've done, skills you have, by all means, there's mechanisms for sharing that Uncharted in the share section. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have any ideas for the podcast, you want to come on the podcast and talk about what you're doing, give us some ideas. We're happy to hear it. But for now, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. And don't give up exploring the Uncharted. There's a great, wide, awesome, magnificent universe out there to explore. Don't let your business of your life make you miss that. So until the next time, enjoy exploring the Uncharted.